Mark, do you like my disclaimer? Put it up there just for you. I knew you'd enjoy it.
The quotes are appreciated.
Yeah. This is from a Disney movie, actually. This program is presented as originally created. It may contain outdated cultural depictions. I decided it was appropriate for my lesson today. Anytime we start talking about family stuff, and especially gender stuff, inevitably we get into the land of stereotypes. They might be stereotypes for a reason. So like today we're going to talk about fatherhood, and I'm going to say things like, dads are like this and moms are like this. Okay. It's entirely possible that your mom and dad were not, or you are not, or that that is an outdated stereotype that doesn't apply, or it might just be true. So you've been warned. I'm going to talk in generalities. Generalities don't apply to every instance, but moms and dads are different, and there's a reason we talk about it this way. So there's your disclaimer. Today's lesson, a generation without dad. It's funny because back in, again, 80s and 90s, a lot of Christian literature was written about a generation without dad. We're now another generation removed from that, so we're like on second generation without dad, and take it for what it's worth. But first question, how and why is God associated with fatherhood? Early in the scriptures, you'll hear references to God the Father. Even before there's any doctrine of a Trinity developed that you could point to and say, oh yeah, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, already the Hebrew people are referring to God as their Father and praying to their Father. Why is that? Well, Matthew 6, 31, 32 is an interesting example. Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. Psalm 103, 13, as a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him. Galatians 4, 6 through 7, and because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into your heart, saying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a son, and if a son, then an heir through God. And then one more, Hebrews 12, 6 through 11. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Okay, four quick passages where God is referenced as a father. What kind of things is it trying to say about God in those passages when it mentions he's a father and he's like this, or call him a father because he's like this? What kind of things stood out to you, if anything? Yeah, gives you what you need, regardless of what you want, but kind of a provider figure. Okay.
One thing that I was going to respond to before the passages came out.
Go for
so
it.
So not related to these passages, but it's the father that causes to be. The mother gives birth,
mm-hmm.
but the father causes that to be.
Especially in
right
in ancient thought, especially like that was very much emphasized that the father was like the originator of life. In that was a point of emphasis. Yeah, for sure.
There's a teacher.
Teacher.
Discipline,
yeah. And kind of the unpleasant side of teaching, right? The mm-hmm. the discipline part. Ones I jotted down was provision, gold star. Yep. He's thought of as kind of a provider of what you need, maybe not what you want, but what you need. And he knows what you need. He's going to take care of you. Some kind of compassion was interesting. So just in case you think it's all about stereotypes of cold, heartless fathers and nurturing mothers. The Bible says, no, he's compassionate towards you like a father. That was built in. Galatians 4 was about identity. He adopts you. He gives you an identity. He allows you to call him father, and that's how you know you're a son. Like, that creates in you an identity. And then, you know, discipline. Say what you want. I know it's a stereotype, but quite often the father gets handed the job of being kind of the disciplinarian in certain circumstances, for better or worse. And again, you can review that disclaimer later, but that's something that's typical. So with that in mind then, what if a child's father is none of these good things? What's the consequence? If we get our view of God largely from father figures, and our fathers are none of these things, we have a problem built into the system, especially for modern life. Here's some data. 18.4 million children currently without their biological father at home, according to, that's 2021, that's new data from the Census Bureau. They also offer some statistics of the results of that. Some of it's vague, but I thought it was interesting. You get a 4 times greater risk of poverty if you don't have your father at home, 7 times more likely for a teen girl to become pregnant as a teenager if her father's not at home, more likely to have behavioral problems in schools, more likely to face abuse and neglect, which is, that one's interesting because we think as father figures as the abusers and neglectors, and yet without the father, the rate of abuse goes up from the guy who's not actually dad but lives with mom. There's a higher rate of abuse among the don't have father at home crowd than those that do. 2 times greater risk of infant mortality. Children die more often when their fathers aren't at home. More likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, more likely to go to prison, 2 times more likely to suffer obesity, go figure. More likely to commit crime, 2 times more likely to drop out of high school. Okay. Ask the psychologist, this one's from the University of California. Neighborhood standards may be set by mothers, but they are enforced by fathers, or at least adult males. The joke about the get off my yard guy, like he's the neighborhood enforcer, right? Somebody else set the rules, but he's the one like, hey kid, you know, get off my yard. It's true. Neighborhoods without fathers are neighborhoods without men able and willing to confront errant youth, chase threatening gangs, reproach delinquent fathers. The absence of father deprives the community of those little platoons that effectively control boys on the streets. Like that's just, it's a built-in role in society that men do differently than women, and when they're not there, it's noticed. David Blankenhorn, who's from the Institute for American Values, which sounds like it would be some kind of like right-wing think tank or something, he considers himself a liberal Democrat. Like he's on the progressive left, and he says, boys needs role models. An opportunity to observe your father controlling their anger and exhibiting their masculinity in productive and socially acceptable ways. If adolescent boys are not affirmed in a positive masculine role model, they will seek to prove their masculinity to the world through violence. That is what we see so much of today. Girls also need fathers to help them learn the proper ways to interact with and receive affection from males. While boys without fathers turn to guns and crime, girls without fathers seem to turn to having babies. And then child psychologist Wade Horn says, if a girl experiences the love of a father who places her well-being above his own and who acts as a natural protector, the girl is likely to delay sexual relations until she finds such a man herself. If she is denied such fatherly love, the girl is likely to try to seek it elsewhere, often inappropriately and often at very young ages. Interesting book. You don't have to go buy it. I'm going to summarize it for you. But it's titled Faith of the Fatherless by Paul Vitz. And he does a psychological profile on history's most famous atheists. You want to know what they all have in common? Yeah, father issues. Either absent fathers or difficult fathers, we'll say that. Atheism of the strong or intense type is to a substantial degree generated by the peculiar psychological needs of its advocates. Nietzsche, father dead. Hume, father dead. Bertrand Russell, father dead. John Paul Sartre, Camus, Daniel Dennett. Father dead, father dead, father dead at a young age. Abusive or distant fathers, again, go down the list. I mean, I was reading these in particular, Richard Dawkins, today's loudest and most angry, cranky atheist, was sent to boarding school by his father, didn't live at home with his dad, and while he was in boarding school, he was abused by an Anglican priest. Turns out he's an atheist, right? An angry atheist, okay? Father figure was replaced by an abuser. Christopher Hitchens, sent to boarding school. It's almost identical story. He, in his biographical information, refers to his dad as commander. Never dad, commander. It's like this authoritarian figure, sent him off to boarding school. When he came back from boarding school, his mother had left his dad and had an affair with a Anglican priest. Again, seen a trend. And then they both killed themselves in a double suicide later on, leaving him and his distant father as the remaining family. Angry atheist. Okay. So I'm not trying to tell you all of history is determined by your parents' situation, but it would be crazy not to notice there are some connections between how your father is in the picture and your view of God later on, especially if you add in some kind of negative church experience to the mix. It paints a picture. Is it universal? No. Again, stereotype. My dad's mother died at 8. His father pretty much threw him out, sent him to relatives. My dad's dad was in prison and other things. Dad became a preacher, right? So apparently it's not like a determinate thing. It has to play out that way. But he's kind of the exception that proves the rule. That's kind of a surprising outcome. Quite often it could have gone the other direction. And if you look at the rest of the dad's family, it quite often did go the other direction. What creates father hunger and what are the symptoms? A lot of ways a person can be losing a father influence or a male role model. Death would be an obvious one. Divorce, often an adoption. The father figure is not everything you'd hope. Addiction, the father can still be in the picture, but addicted and not going to be what you hope. Abuse. On the list I read from, actually this was called traditional fatherhood, which I felt very insulted by. So I replaced it with distant fatherhood. I'd like to think that's not traditional, but maybe it is. And then abandonment would be another. Again, dad tells the story of he and his brother, his younger brother was in a stroller. Dad was old enough to push the stroller. And his dad left him at the post office at Seminole and said, I'll be back in about an hour. And they didn't see him again for a month. Right? So, like, yeah, you get your daddy issues from abandonment and things like that. What does father loss cause? What the psychologists tell us, it can cause decreased self-esteem in a child, fear of abandonment, understandably, result in exaggerated fears of being alone, undue feelings of shame, difficulties in managing emotions, especially anger, overt craving for control. A lot of young people who didn't have a strong family figure who kind of showed what control looked like become control freaks. Can result in problems with trusting others, again, understandably, and result in the feeling that one truly doesn't deserve good things. Because if I deserved anything good, my dad was stuck around. Okay. All right, that's all the bad news. What can we do about it?
Hang on, I'm going to go back to 23 for a second.
Which one?
Sorry, 23. I just wanted to add, and I never thought we would have to be adding this one, but the one has been to change gender. That's an interesting thing that we're having to, I think, add to that list and have, like, gender identity.
And so maybe a decision like not to change your sexual preference.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of both.
Yes.
Both kind of fall under abandonment. So I agree with that.
Yeah.
Neglect is not on your list. neglect being that of the father is present but doesn't act like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Abandonment is a wholesale removal physically.
Yeah.
But we have a number of fathers who are present there without it being there in spirit for their children.
Present but not accounted for.
Right.
Yep.
Anyways,
well, you made it worse. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What can we do about it? to Mark's point, if you want God to be viewed positively through the light of a father, the father's going to have to show some of the qualities of God. That's a high bar, fellas. Sorry, but it's what we're called to do. So, yes, be a provider. That changes some in the modern context. We're not, agrarian sheep herders or whatever, but finding ways to make sure your family is provided for is part of our work. It can be a shared work, but it's still part of our work. Show compassion. Be that person in your child's life. Provide identity. Help them know who they are by knowing how they connect to you. Yes, manage discipline. Don't make that the other spouse's job all on their own. I don't think it has to be where the father is the disciplinarian, but you have to participate, and there's going to be times when you need to take the lead, and that needs to happen. But above all, perhaps be present. God is never not in the picture, right? And you're going to have to be in the picture. Let me read a little bit from Elise Elhegg, if I say your name right, Institute for Family Studies. The link between a father's presence and better fathering may have something to do with how fatherhood physically transforms men. New research from the University of Michigan finds that fathers undergo physical changes even before their child is born, with new fathers experiencing drops in testosterone levels during their partner's pregnancy. Men who showed larger declines in testosterone reported less hostile behavior toward their infant, and with their partners reported that they helped around the house more often, said psychology professor Robin Edelstein. That's a physiological point, that like God has designed us so that if you're in the right place, your body starts telling you how to behave. Just being around the baby, there's chemical changes in your body that says do the dishes. Isn't that wild? Like God programmed you to function in that way.
That's funny. I would have thought they would become more protective.
Protective, but at the same time...
Of clean dishes.
Of clean dishes, yeah. But yeah, like testosterone goes down.
You thought, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Other studies have found that men may experience increases in the hormone prolactin before birth and increases in the stress hormone cortisol after birth. Well, stress, I believe that one. However, as family studies contributor David Lapp noted in a summary of the 2014 report, Mother Bodies, Father Bodies, these changes seem to be dependent on the father's contact with the mother and children. Like how much you interact with the child determines the amount of hormones in your body. It's a physiological change. Lapp explains that in one study, men's hormonal levels were linked with their partner's hormonal levels. Moreover, fathers who have more experience with babies have lower testosterone levels and higher prolactin levels than first-time fathers. While both married and cohabitating fathers can experience these hormonal changes and tend to be more involved with their kids than non-resident fathers, married parenthood is more likely to produce engaged fathers over the long haul. That is because cohabiting parenthood is not equal to married parenthood when it comes to child well-being. One study by researchers at the University of Maryland and the University of Oklahoma concluded that marriage per se confers advantage in terms of father involvement above and beyond the characteristics of the fathers themselves, whereas biology does not. According to University of Maryland professor Hondreth Horforth, the study found that cohabiting partners, even if they are biological father to the child, do not invest the same amount of time with children as married biological fathers, and they are less warm than the married biological fathers. Almost done, I promise. I'm not going to read the whole time. Cohabiting relationships are also less secure than married relationships. One study found that children born to cohabiting parents in their 20s are three times more likely to experience parental breakup than the children of married parents. The large-scale Fragile Families and Child Well-Being study, meanwhile, found that, quote, father involvement drops sharply after a relationship between unmarried parents ends. All that to say, science agrees with the stereotype we said at the first beginning of the lesson. Follow the program. Marriage and family were the intent of God and are hardwired into your DNA. There's actually physiological differences in you when you follow the program and show up. So I don't know how to be a father. God literally programmed your DNA to teach you how to be a better father if you're in the right place, if you just show up. Mothers, this applies to you as well. Your turn. I'll read the long stuff, and then you can tell mothers how to behave, because they won't like it if I say it all. Good fathering is also linked to a quality of a man's relationship with the mother of his children. Researchers have dubbed this the package deal of fathering, where a man's relationship status with his child's mother predicts his level of involvement in that child's life. Fathers tend to parent in triads with mothers. Notes the Mother Bodies, Father Bodies report. Especially with their young children, fathers defer to mothers, look to them for permission and guidance, and are more apt to exit the lives of their children when the primary relationship with the mother ends. Mothers naturally exert a powerful influence over the father-child relationship that can either negatively or positively impact father involvement. This maternal gatekeeping, as it is known, is defined by Melissa Stewart, vice president of the National Fatherhood Initiative, as, quote, a mother's protective beliefs about the desirability of a father's involvement in their child's life and the behaviors acted upon that either facilitate or hinder collaborative child rearing by both parents. As the primary caregiver in most couples, A mother can interfere in a child's relationship with his kids in a number of ways, including by showing lack of respect for his role as a father, being overly critical of him in front of the kids, not allowing him to be involved in certain aspects of child care, or, in the case of divorce or a breakup, not allowing him to see the child or making it harder for him to do so. Your turn. Lecture mothers.
Oh, you want me to read that?
I want you to believe it. Say it with conviction.
Mothers as teammates. Be present. Work on your marriage, not just for the kids. Create fatherhood space. Demonstrate respect, not always agreement.
Offer praise. I didn't write that. You must have changed that slide. That's not what I had.
And offer praise. Yes, that works.
Talk about number two a minute.
Work on the marriage.
Because we talk about that a lot.
We do. We talk about that a lot. Put your marriage before your children. It has to be that way, or it's going to be a fight with the kids, with everything. Make time for your marriage. Send the kids off to grandparents. Have a date night. Schedule it. Put it on the calendar. Spend time together. Be intentional about working on your marriage and being together. When you are working on that and even if you're not in complete agreement, you don't have to be, you're two different people, but you're showing your kids that you're working on it. One of the things I think we mentioned last week, we tried to do like a yearly cabin trip and just go away. Lucas was like, why are y'all doing that? And I just looked at him and said, to be better parents. Oh, and it is sometimes just that simple. It's just taking a moment to step back. The other one, the demonstrate respect, not always agreement. I've always kept that kind of in the back of my mind whenever things come up with Ben and I. Because I want my kids to have a different view. I want them to see that the father is the head of our household. I'm still my own independent person. I'm very much into that, and I want to be, in a way, self-sufficient. But I also want them to learn not only to have respect for him, but also to do that. They're young boys. They're going to have to do that, and I want them to be the best men that they can be. So that's something personally I've really had to work on, is a way to show that I can disagree with him, but we're still on the same page when it comes to parenting and big life decisions.
Sometimes it's just the difference between, well, you're wrong about that, as opposed to, that's stupid.
Yeah.
like one is disagreement, one is your father's an idiot, you know? And as simple as it is, it's you're teaching the child a proper relationship to another person, but especially to a father figure. Talk about number five, because that one's always funny to me.
Offer praise.
Yes. Because all men,
it's true,
want to be praised by women. Now, there's my cultural throwback moment, but we're all just cavemen wanting women to say, "Thad good," you know.
Is that a love language?
Yeah, it's a love language.
It's a love language.
It's true.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, praising small things creates larger things. You know, I don't know why that is, but it does. Oh, look, you put your one dish away, dear. Good job. It's like, oh, she likes it when I push that dish away. I'll put two away tomorrow, you know. And it's positive reinforcement.
I try to say it not being condescending, you know.
Yeah. It's great the way you put your dish away while I was cleaning the shower with a toothbrush. Good job, dear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the most meaningful times for that to happen is far after the fact. Not think of anything specific, but if Valerie were to say, you know, earlier in the day when you did this and that, just want you to know, that was amazing. Really appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after the fact, that it was worth bringing up again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that really reinforces good behavior. It's a little bit of parenting, but it's, yeah. I'll accept it. Strokes my ego.
Well, and that's the other side of that is, I've noticed you react better if I am frustrated with you on something and I bring up, hey, you're whatever, I didn't appreciate this or like this, instead of me yelling at you in that moment and saying, "You idiot."
Just think it. Yeah. Don't say it out loud.
I have to, you know, keep my filter on and not yell it.
But it works.
What does fatherhood space mean?
Create fatherhood space. To me, I think that's an intentional time for your kids to interact with dad making time. Ben loves to play video games. It's his thing. It's his chill time. He will get so wrapped up in it, and the boys want to play with him, and of course they can't.
But they get my character killed.
I know. But there are times I have to go, "Hey, you've been on there for quite a while. Why don't you let them on and play with you?"
And it's always fun, and I'm always glad I did it.
And it's just that, and helping him. For us personally, I know that it's kind of my job just to nudge and help him aware, because it's not as on his radar, and that's fine. I can help him create that space for them to bond and have time together.
Also, if you're, and I won't name any names, but if you're kind of a control freak mother, sometimes it's letting go of a situation. So I'll give an example yesterday where you didn't do this, which was fun. We were getting ready for dinner, actually, and I was in the bedroom and was
taking a nap while I was scrubbing.
No, I wasn't taking a nap. I was
toothbrush.
No, I was reading a book or something. But we were both kind of in the bedroom, and the kids were doing their own thing, and she was getting dressed, and we hear every parent's favorite sound, shattering glass. Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Oh, good." And I didn't hear it. I had ear pods in, actually. And so she, "Oh, take care of that." You know, it's like, okay. So I go out there, and he had dropped one of these indestructible bowls that are supposed to never break, shattered, like all over the floor. And so I'm out there kind of looking at it and assessing, like, okay, we need to maybe get a broom. We need to sweep this up. And I'm, you know, not always the most decisive parent. It was taking me a little while, but we were getting there. And then from behind me, out comes mom in a robe and a towel or whatever. I was like, "Didn't you just send me out here to do this?" Right? But deep in her heart, she knows I'm incapable of doing it. So she came back around behind me to make sure it got done. It's important to kind of create the space for the father to be a father figure and fail miserably, even though...
That was a safety issue.
I had it covered. I know glass bad. I mean, I'm okay with that, right? I can do that. But it's letting, if you say, "Hey, go handle that," and then jump back in.
Yeah.
Either parent can do that, actually. Fathers, I've seen fathers do it to mothers that, like, won't give them the space to discipline or correct or teach. You got to let it go. And even when it's a little different than you would have done it, you say, "All right, go do it." Huh?
I'm guilty.
Do you? You're a jumper inner? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing, and like jump in. Yeah. Okay. So that's, to me, that's fatherhood space. So just allow it to unfold a little bit and take your deep breaths and let it happen.
Yeah.
One final note before we open up to anything you want to talk about today. That passage in Galatians, Abba, Father, also mentioned in Romans, the idea that God makes it possible for us to have a father in him. The solution starts in your home, but it doesn't end there. Okay, if every one of you is the father you're supposed to be, that's great. Didn't actually fix the 18.4 million kids who don't have a father figure currently. So it's not fair, but too bad. Christian men are both going to have to be good fathers at home. And they're going to have to be the stand-in role models for a lot of kids who didn't get that. And they desperately need it. The kids you interact with at school, Terry, or, you know, the kids that you interact with out in public that you like to wallop with something, every one of them, I won't say everyone, the vast majority of them are kids in need of a male father role model. And they're not getting it anywhere else. We would see this at church camp a lot, where kids would gravitate, especially the boys, teenage boys would gravitate to the male counselors in a way that always surprised me. And the grumpiest, crotchetiest male counselors had the little gaggle of followers, because it was like the strong male role model, and they just loved it. and just for a week they had that in their life, and it was always kind of amazing to me. They had lots of buddy figures. They didn't have any father figures, and they were craving that. So being that, especially, what organization in our society is actively aimed at providing positive role models for at-risk youth? There's not a lot of institutions that exist with that purpose in mind. Churches can be. We can say, fellas do better, and we can put at-risk kids next to adult role models, and we can be that place. If we're not doing it, there's not a lot of other folks out there doing it, right? There are some, not a lot.
Like DHS and the foster system?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a point for social critique. Like, we complain about all the systems, but we're the ones that left them with it because we're not doing it, right? Thoughts and comments on the father dilemma, either for your own home, how you can do better, or how we can address giant societal issues, cure all the world's problems, make fun of Celine some more? Any of those comments are valid?
The church that we were in, many churches that are now in Oregon, they had Foster Parents Night Out.
Had what, I'm sorry?
Foster Parents Night Out.
Foster Parents Night Out.
Say Parents cool. Night Out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Making time for the marriage or yeah, something of that nature. Young marrieds or mm-hmm. mentoring programs. Yeah. I wasn't part of that,
yeah,
but I witnessed it. And yeah, I think it's a place where churches could step in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would be good. Would be very good. I like
Can
that.
You go back to the slide that shows the statistics yeah, since 1960? So all of that.
All of these.
All of that, the social critique and the popular discourse has been the concept of toxic masculinity.
Mm.
And so when the world says, oh, we have a problem of toxic masculinity since 1960, actually, it's the opposite of that. Toxic masculinity is a measurement of absence, not of presence.
Yeah.
And so when the world says, look at these men, they're abusive, and actually, their own statistics suggest that masculinity is needed.
Yeah, it wasn't that we had instead of grumpy male role models producing grumpy youth. It's that we had no male role models right, producing abusers and all of those things. Like right, there is a thing such as toxic masculinity,
sure,
but it's a symptom more than it is a cause.
Right.
It came from absence.
And I think yeah, you have it on the slide after the last graphic. The word is in there in your quote. There it is right there, the absence of fathers.
Yeah.
So when the world says, oh, you Christians and your traditional family structures encourage toxic masculinity, actually, no. It suggests that if we did structure our families as though God wanted us to, the presence of fathers would not deprive the community of the structure
yeah,
in which we need. I found it helpful to that Wilson's definition in particular,
yeah,
that it's a measurement of absence.
Yeah. And that's not to say that every Christian home is perfect or that Christian homes can't produce bad things.
Right.
But again, when we're talking in like broad strokes, paintbrush, mm-hmm, statistically, mediocre Christian homes are doing a better job than
right,
absent homes. I mean, it's statistically, it pans out. It's working. Quite often,
really hard.
Fathers yeah, will pick one of these and use it as an excuse not to do some of the others. So like, I'm the disciplinarian, or I'm the provider, so I don't need to demonstrate compassion or something like that. Or I'm their buddy, and so I don't want to be the disciplinarian or the, you know, the other. It's, you're going to have to kind of tackle all of it in measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially like your point about giving them time. With Lucas, I'm learning. If I want Lucas to talk to me about important things, I have to listen when he talks to me about really unimportant things.
Yeah.
Like 99 out of 100 times when he says, hey, Dad, it's going to be a story about Minecraft. And I don't care at all. Okay? But if I don't listen to that boring story about the game he is playing right now or this thing that happened at school that I think is absurd, then that one thing that I, as a father, would really like for him to tell me, he's not ever going to share. You have to make time for the nonsense. to create a channel of communication, or the actual important conversation that you really want to have never happens.